Okay, so it's January 16, 2011, in Chennai at Tarika's house. One of my best friends is named Tarika. She lives in Australia. We're going to give the handouts to everybody. This is on obstacles and tests. I really like these kind of flowers. I want them for my deities. Do we have any trees here where they grow?
These white ones?
Yeah.
The white ones, we have many trees. Just the opposite side of people.
Yeah, opposite side, there's many trees. They took me to the ocean and I saw. And then we forgot to pick any.
Today morning,
yesterday afternoon, evening. Okay, let's see. So we are. Everybody here wants to be Krishna conscious, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
And sometimes it's very difficult, and sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes it seems that we have things in our life that make spiritual progress difficult. Or maybe you can help me. What would you say is the definition of an obstacle? I'm asking you.
That which hinders our progress.
Something that hinders our progress. All right. Like you're driving down the street and there's a block in the road and you have to take a detour. I think in British they call it a diversion. You call it a diversion? Like the British, okay. America, diversion means something else. Diversion means like a pastime. So if there's a block in the road and you have to take a diversion, you can't go directly to your destination because there's some obstacle. Maybe there's a flood in the road, or like now in Vrindavan, they're doing construction. So they are digging up the roads. And the holes in the roads are as big as this room. You know, what is this? 8-10 feet, like 3 meters. At least like that. And there's only this much road for walking. So that's an obstacle. You cannot bring your car, you cannot bring your motorbike, even walking is very dangerous. Alright, so does anybody here ever have any obstacles in their Krishna consciousness? Whoever has an obstacle in their Krishna consciousness. So, we're going to look at today why we have these obstacles and what we can do about them. And I've called this seminar Obstacles and Tests. Can anyone think of what is the difference between an obstacle and a test? Or maybe there's no difference. You think this? I'm not sure. I've been trying to decide if there's a difference. Maybe, maybe not. So, what do you think is the difference?
Obstacle means we cannot. It's like something not allowing us to go outside. That's just something like we have to do and we have to go there.
You have to go. Yeah. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Even with the fan, you can. Why don't you all move forward like this much? Everybody, move forward this much. Yes. There we go. Prabhupada said, our purpose of ISKCON is to bring the members closer to Krishna and to each other. So I think of it like that. I think of it like obstacle is almost something you have to go around, and test is something you have to go through. Like an obstacle is telling you, no, you cannot, you have to go a different way. You're going the wrong way. But in one sense, they're all tests. Because they're all saying, how do we respond? How do we respond? And one of my very senior god sisters asked me many years ago, She said, how do you know when there's some problem? How do you know if you're supposed to keep pushing and going through it or if you are supposed to change direction? Do you understand what I'm saying? I wish I had a board. I could draw a picture. So let's see if you can make a picture in your mind. So you're going down the road and there's some problem. So then you have to decide, do I take a diversion or do I try to go through? Do I find a way to go through? Like I've been staying in Vrindavan a few months and there's a railroad track where the gate is closed all the time. They never open. So, of course, you don't know when the train is coming and when the train is not coming. That's a problem. But at least the bicycles, motorbikes, and people walking on foot, they all go through. The auto rickshaws, the bicycle rickshaws, the auto rickshaws, and the cars, they have to take a diversion. But everybody else goes through. So sometimes in devotional service, it seems... What I understand is sometimes there's an obstacle where Krishna is saying, no, don't go this way. You're doing it the wrong way. Change. Go in a diversion. And sometimes it's a test of our sincerity. How much am I willing to keep going in the same way? I mean, on a gross platform, we could say it's like if you are doing some project. You say, like this temple, I'm going to build a temple. And if Krishna sends you no money, so do you forget about building a temple and you do something else? Or do you keep trying to get the money? I see it like that. An obstacle, you say, oh, the Krishna, he wants me to do something different. He's telling me this is not the right path. And test is, he wants me to work harder. But sometimes he also wants you to work differently. So in one sense, I think obstacles and tests are the same. Because both of them are asking us to change something in ourselves. Even if you say it's a test and I have to go through, you will have to go through in a different way. You all understanding? Am I speaking slowly enough?
Yes.
Is my language simple enough? You can understand? If it's not, you promise me you will tell me, please. Don't just... Huh?
Louder.
I can't speak much louder. Why don't you, if you're going to sit in a chair anyway, then why don't you sit here on the couch? Okay? But here's a couch. Couch is much better, more comfortable. Please sit on the couch. So any of you, if you want to sit forward also, you can come. And there's some more, maybe you can move up a little bit over here and over here. Here, on the side. Because I don't want to scream. You can come over here. Okay, that's better. So even if you have, can you all hear me in the back now?
Yes.
Even with the fans, everything? Okay. So even if you're going to go through, you have to go through in a different way. You know, when there's a railroad track and the bars are down, you cannot just walk. You have to go this way, this way, this way, and down and up, and you have to look for the train. Or when they are digging in the street, again, and there's only 1 foot path on each side. You cannot just walk. If you walk, you will fall in the hole. So you have to change something. So whether we say it is an obstacle or it's a test, both of these, no matter how you look at it, the message is you have to change something. You cannot just keep doing something in the same way. So it's some message from Krishna. It's some message from Krishna. Oh, here's our scholar. Tarani Radha and I were having a little discussion on the email. And she found, so I made one point, and she found the only quote I know of that will defeat that point. She knew exactly what quote to find. So I was thinking, Tarani Radha must be a great scholar. So does this make sense to everybody? Now we're going to look at the difference between the devotee's mentality and the materialistic mentality. When a materialist finds some obstacle, what do they usually try to do? You know? They'll become sad. Sometimes they become sad.
Struggle.
Well, everybody will have a struggle when there's an obstacle. Devotee, not devotee. They get angry at the obstacle. They try to blame whoever put the obstacle there.
To hide.
Sometimes they hide, yes. Sometimes.
They will lament.
Okay. So I'm going down the road and there's some obstacle. So I can sit and cry. I can say, I wanted to go to this place. Now the road is big hole. Now I can sit and cry. I can get angry. Who has dug this hole in the road? Right? Just like I'm doing some service at the school in Vrindavan. And then I went to the school, no problem. I came out of the school, there was no road. The road was gone. Really? In the morning there was road, and afternoon there was no road. There was just a hole. I wish I were exaggerating this, but I'm not exaggerating this. On one side, no place to walk. Other side, only like this. A third of a meter. So you think you become angry. Who is the fool? They've made a big hole in front of a school. How are the children going to get out of the school? Little children. We're 5 years old, you know? So we can become sad. Just say, now I have to live at the school. I cannot go home. Or you can become angry at the person who made the problem. Or what else can you do? What else do materialistic people try to do? What is the materialistic way?
Punish.
Punish somebody? Find out who dug the hole and beat them up? Ask the police to arrest them? What else?
They'll stop going that way and return back.
They might just return back and cry. Just say, I give up. I can't go. Now I can't go. Just see, I can't go. There's a hole in the road. I can't go. They might try to destroy the obstacle. So maybe I will get a bunch of dirt and I will put it in the hole. So I think those are, maybe we can think of some more. But I think generally the materialistic way of dealing with obstacles is I lament, I become discouraged, I give up, I can't do this, it's too hard, I get angry. And really I'm angry at Krishna, but usually I get angry at somebody else. I don't get angry at Krishna directly. Sometimes I get angry at Krishna directly, if I can't blame any other person. But first I look for another person to be angry at. Because getting angry at Krishna isn't so productive. It doesn't help me so much. But if I can get angry at you, that's easier because I can just yell at you. So I get angry at the person I think has created the obstacle, or I try to destroy the obstacle. I try to make everything go back to what it was before. So this is a materialistic way of dealing with obstacles. So what do we have? What are our choices for a materialist? Can anybody tell me what we said? Or destroy it. Try to make it back to what it was before. Go back. Have you ever noticed it's very hard to go back?
Yeah.
Right? So if you can think about some obstacle in your life, and then think about, did you do these things? If you had some obstacle in your Krishna consciousness, what do you usually do? Do you just get sad? You say, oh, Krishna consciousness is too hard.
Get angry at somebody.
Get angry at somebody. Get angry at your parents, your husband, usually some authority. Because generally we think my authority is the problem. When we are angry in authority, really we're angry at God. But usually we think, if the person, this person above me, if they would change, then I could do what I wanted, then I could be a devotee. So I see generally it's angry at parents, angry at husbands, sometimes angry at the temple president or the GBC. I've even seen people get angry at their Guru Maharaj. I've seen that. They get angry at the whole GBC, or they get angry at the government, or their boss at work, or their professor at school. You will notice it's almost always an authority. Not always, not 100%, but probably 95%.
The mother.
Mother. It's my mother's fault. If you think about it, sometimes it's not an authority, but usually. Usually it's someone that we think has some power in our life. Someone who has some power that I don't have. I mean, sometimes I may get angry at a friend also. Somebody. At ourselves? Sometimes we get angry at ourselves. Oh, I'm such a fool. Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes. Or else I just try to fix everything the way it was before. With great determination, I'm going to smash this obstacle. So you can see that all of these reactions have the mood that I'm the controller. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. I am the doer and I am the controller. They also have a mood that I know what is best. That this looks to me like the fastest, easiest way to become Krishna conscious. And therefore, it is the fastest, easiest way. So I have to go this way. Are any of you teachers? Anybody here a teacher? A couple of you are teachers. So, you know, sometimes if a student is having difficulty with something, then we have to try something different to teach them. Or, like I'm speaking in English, and if I say some word and you do not understand, if I say that word loudly, you will not understand. I have to say a different word. Sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes I'm speaking, someone else is translating, and they don't understand something. And I'm thinking, I don't know any other way to say this. I get stuck. How else can I explain it? So Krishna also deals with us that way. He knows exactly what we need to do to learn. And it may be different from what I'm thinking. Also, each of us is going to Krishna in our own individual way. There are some general things that are true for everybody. Everybody should chant Hare Krishna. Everybody should offer their food to Krishna. But each of us, we're also learning in an individual way. So what is the best way for you may not be the best way for you. Just like I was saying at the railroad tracks, the bicycles, the motorbikes, the people walking, they can go through. The cars, the rickshaws, they have to go around. If the car tries to go through, the car will break. You can say a car is a better vehicle than a bicycle, but for that place, bicycle's better than a car. So each of us has a different vehicle. Each of us has a different body, different mentality. Our past lives are different. Our particular material attachments are a little different. We all want to exploit the world, but I want to exploit in one way and you want to exploit in another way. Like maybe I like, pineapple and you like mango. We each have our difference. So Krishna is the expert teacher, and he knows what is the best and the fastest way for each person. So the devotee sees like that. They see that everything is being done by Krishna. Everything's being done by Krishna. Nobody can do anything. Ishvara Padma Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So of all the causes, Krishna is the cause of the cause of the cause. So even if it appears that the problem is coming from my mother, or the problem is coming from my husband, or the problem is coming from my temple president, or my teacher, or my body, or something, it's Krishna ultimately who's arranging it. And people will sometimes say to me, how do I know when it's Krishna doing it? How do I know when it's me doing it? I say, it's always Krishna doing it. But when we're in the material world, it's also always me doing it. So let's say that a person becomes a drunkard. You all understand what is a drunkard? They become addicted to alcohol. You all know what is, you little children, you know what is alcohol? You know what is alcohol? They take some food, like usually they take grapes or potatoes, or else they take some grain like barley, sometimes wheat or rice. Usually it's grapes or potatoes or barley. And they make it spoiled. They make it into juice, then they let it get old so it smells bad. And then it produces poisons. And then they drink it. You say, why will they drink poison? They are enjoying being a little bit poisoned, actually. They're making the body a little bit sick, and they're enjoying being sick. Crazy, huh? It's crazy. But if people become addicted to alcohol, and then they go to a treatment center. So in the treatment center, some of the treatment will be painful. So is that pain caused by the doctor or by the patient? Who is causing the pain in the treatment? Patient. Also, you could say the doctor, though, correct? Isn't it? The doctor is saying you have to take this treatment, and the treatment is painful. So you could say the doctor is causing the treatment, the painful treatment, but the patient is causing the painful treatment, because if you don't become addicted to alcohol, you don't have to take the treatment at all. Everybody understand this? Yes? So for the Nichasiddha devotees, they don't have to have any kind of painful obstacles. So you could say all of the difficulty we have is my responsibility, 100%. And also you can say that 100% it is Krishna doing it. Krishna's doing it, but he's doing it because I'm a nonsense. If I'm not a nonsense, no need to be cured. If I'm not diseased, then I'm already cured. Of course, you can say the great devotees also, they seem to have obstacles. That is a different thing. That's more like a drama. It's a game. It's called krida or lila. Like when children are playing a game, they may create imaginary obstacles in their game. Because that's fun. That's a different thing. They're not suffering. So if we understand Krishna has put this obstacle in my path, Krishna's using my mother, Krishna's using my teacher, Krishna's using my body, Krishna's using the weather, Krishna's using whatever, to create this thing that looks to me like an obstacle. Why? Because he wants to help me be Krishna conscious. So my suffering is my responsibility. It's always my responsibility. But I still see that Krishna's engineering things. Now the materialistic person thinks I am the doer I'm going to become happy, and all these other people, they are creating problems for me. So the devotee sees, this is Krishna helping me. And the non-devotee sees, this is God or nature, other people making problems for me. They're stopping me from going to where I want to go. And we see Krishna wants me to go in another way. So this is the essential difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. So before we go on to specifics, I just want to know if I'm actually teaching here effectively. So could someone explain to me what is the essential difference between how the materialist and how the devotee views obstacles? Okay, the devotee tries to learn.
And they say it's an obstacle given to me by Krishna.
They see it's an obstacle given to me by Krishna.
They easily accept that it's an obstacle.
They accept that it's from Krishna. That Krishna is telling them something. What else?
They try to tolerate it.
Well, we haven't come to specifics yet. Sees that it's in a positive way. This is to help me. They take responsibility and say, the reason I have these obstacles, I'm the one who came to the material world. I'm the one who's wanted to forget Krishna. So I need purification. Yes.
Devotees think that Krishna is using their body or anything obstacle as something to teach them.
Yes, the devotee is thinking Krishna is using this to teach me. Any more? How the non-devotee feels? How do the materialist feel?
They get angry.
They get angry. What's their mentality?
They think they are the doer.
I'm the doer.
And I'm not the cause for this.
Somebody else's responsibility.
I want to overdo this.
I want you to just overcome. I want to just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Somehow I want you to just get rid of it.
Irritated.
They get irritated. They get sad. They get frustrated. They get angry. In some way, all they want to do is get rid of it. Does anyone have a pen or a pencil I could borrow for 1 minute? Okay. So, I hope you can all see this. I keep remembering I should bring this other thing with me wherever I go. So, I think Tamil, you write like this, right? Do you write like Tamil like this? Is that right?
Old days
they used to write like this. How do you write Tamil now?
Normal
way, like that. Ah. So, they've done studies that the way you hold your pencil, it will either make writing easier or harder. So they've done studies that if you hold your pencil like this, then you can write for a longer time without your hand getting tired. But when children come to the school, they start school, well, what age they start school here? Probably young, right?
2.5 years.
All right, Krishna.
2.5, preschool.
3 years.
All right, Krishna. So in America, usually we start school at 5. I mean, you may go to nursery school at 2, but it's not really school. You just play.
By 3, they start words, and by 4, they start to tables.
Hare Krishna.
Fractions.
Actually, Prabhupada said not to do that until 5, but I'm not going to talk about that. So, he said until 5, they should play and run. So, when they come at 5, most children have already been writing a little bit at home or in a nursery school, but nobody was really teaching them. So we find children, they're holding their pencil like this, or all kinds of crazy ways when they come to school. And then we have to teach them to hold like this. So some children, you just say, hold like this, and they do it. And other children, they just don't do it. And they've had a bad habit. Some of them, 3-4 years, they've had a bad habit. So in America, they sell this little thing. It's made of rubber. And you put it on the pencil, and it has grooves. It has, do you understand grooves, trenches, valleys? It has a shape. so that your fingers have to go in the right place. It forces you to put your fingers in the right place. So if the child will not listen when we say hold like this, then we put those thing on their pencil. So then some of the children, they actually use it properly. If they use it properly, then what do we do after some time with that rubber thing?
Remove it.
Take it off. Exactly. So after maybe 1-2 weeks, the child is using this, then we take it off. But some children, what do you think they do? They don't want to use it. What do? They take it off. They put it in their desk. What else do they do?
They tear it.
Put it in their mouth. They break. They try. It's very hard to break those things. I've never seen anybody break. They have to use a scissors. They throw it someplace. Yes, sometimes they throw it someplace.
They lose their pen.
They hide it. They lose their pen. Yes, they do that. I don't know where my pen is. They do that. What else do they do? I haven't found one who ate it yet, but what they'll do is they'll push it up. They'll push it up on the pen and then they'll put their hand under it. I've seen some of the children will have two pens, one pen with the thing on it, another pen, and when I look at them, they pick up the one, and when I don't look at them, they pick up the other. Or sometimes they just move it up a little bit and they put their hands over it. So they don't understand that if they use it properly, what will happen? It will go away. We'll take it away. Right? They are trying to make it go away by force. So the materialists, they're trying to make their obstacles go away by force. And the devotee, they are asking, what is the lesson? So if you can just remember only this one thing. When there is an obstacle, you ask, what is the lesson? What does Krishna want me to learn? Not what does Krishna want the other person to learn. Not what does Krishna want my mother to learn. Not what does Krishna want my husband to learn. Not what does Krishna want my GBC to learn or my boss. What does Krishna want me to learn? Maybe my mother also has to learn something, but that is not my problem. That's Krishna's problem, not my problem. Is this okay? Everybody okay with this now? So if we do that and we learn the right thing, then what will happen to the obstacle? It will go away. And I find there's two ways it can go away. It can go away externally. The obstacle can actually go away. The road gets fixed, no more problem. Or externally it's still there, but I am not disturbed anymore. Something has changed inside of me, and it doesn't, it's not an obstacle for me anymore. You understand the difference? So maybe the person who's disturbing me, they stop disturbing me, or they go away. Or maybe they keep disturbing, but I'm not disturbed anymore. So one of those two things will happen. If you use obstacles correctly. So now we're going to look at some different specific ways that we can use our obstacles correctly. What are the lessons? Because if we just say, well, Krishna's teaching us a lesson, we might say, what lesson? Now, I'm not expecting that what I'm explaining here is, I'm not saying this is complete. There may be many more, but we're going to look at a few. So the first reason could be, first lesson could be, Krishna wants us to become sincere. We use this word a lot, sincere. And in America, we have an expression called a fair weather friend. Fair weather friend means I'm your friend when everything's good. When everything's not good, then I'm not your friend anymore. So I knew one married couple. They were married a very long time, 40-something years. Husband was always rich and famous, powerful person. And then one day there was some problem and he lost his money. And then the wife left him. So this is fair weather friend. That is really a fair weather friend. I'm sure we have all had fair weather friends. I knew of also one couple where they were going to get married. Wedding was all planned. And the woman got into a very bad accident. I think it was a car accident. There was a big fire. And she was all burned. And you know, when people get burned, it becomes ugly. The skin becomes... So she became very ugly. Have you seen people, their faces are burned? Not just little, it becomes almost like a monster, you know? He said, I'm not going to marry you anymore. So that's fair weather friend. I'll be with you when everything is nice, and if it's not nice, I'm gone. So we all have experience with people with us who are fair weather friends, right? So Prabhupada talks about two people who go to Krishna. One person who goes to Krishna only when things are good, and as soon as they are bad, oh, I don't need you anymore. Useless God. He gives the example in Germany in the war that the women were going to the church. Oh God, please save my husband, please save my father, please save my son. And he said none of them were saved, they were all killed. And so the women became atheists. Another kind of person, they only go to God when there's a problem. I don't know if any of you know Kalangana from London? None of you know Kalangana? Kalangana is about 77. You know Kalangana. Oh, about 77 years old. She's a disciple of Prabhupada. She joined when she was like 40 or something. And she makes these incredible sweets for the deities out of their fresh cow's milk. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. She's a very special lady. So she and I were taking a japa walk. And while we were walking, this other woman asked us for directions. And Kalangana said, you can walk with us a little bit. So while she's walking with us, Kalangana starts preaching to her. I was so embarrassed. Kalangana's saying to her, so you should chant Hare Krishna. I'm like, oh my God. And she's just telling her, you should chant. And then this woman said, why should I chant? Kalangana said, to depend on God. And she said, but I don't have any problems. Why should I depend on God? She said, when I have a problem, then I'll pray. So there are these two kinds of people who go to Krishna. One who only goes when there's a problem, and as soon as the problem's finished, like Krishna's their doctor, you know. They only go when they're sick. Another kind, they only go when they're nice, and when things are nice, when they're not nice, they leave. So many times our obstacles are to develop real devotion in us. Are you going to be a devotee even when everything is very bad? When everything is very difficult? Or are you only going to be a devotee when it's easy? Without this, we don't become real lovers. If we're really going to become a lover of Krishna, we have to be a deep lover of Krishna. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, whether you embrace me or you crush me, I still love you. That's a very deep lover. We don't find in this world people love like that usually. I love you if you're nice to me. But that's not love. Then it's not about you, it's about me. I love you if you do this for me. I love you if you do this. Then I'm not loving you. I'm loving what you do for me. I'm loving me. It's not love. So how will Krishna train us to actually be a lover? It's a training. And I've heard so many devotees ask, if Krishna really wants me to be Krishna conscious, why doesn't he make it easy? Why doesn't he give me a husband who supports Krishna consciousness? I know of so many ladies, their husband does not support their Krishna consciousness. And there's one lady I know, whenever she goes to the temple, she has to lie to her husband. Otherwise, he'll never let her go. So sometimes the husband doesn't support, sometimes the parents don't support, sometimes it's brothers and sisters. or there's so much pressure from school, so much studying, or such a difficult schedule at work, and you might think, why doesn't Krishna make it easy? But then we don't develop love. Then we think we are developing love. We think, oh yes, I love Krishna so much. But it's not true. And now it's very difficult to have real love for Krishna when things are painful. It's not easy. But then it becomes actually satisfying. Because the only thing, Sivai Pum Sam Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Rahokshita Ahoitu Ki Apritiyata Yad Yatma Supersediti. The only thing that will give real happiness to ourselves is love for Krishna that is not stopped by obstacles. Love that is stopped by obstacles will not make us happy because it's not real love. So when I was young, probably as old as some of you, there were songs on the radio, you know, I will love you as long as the stars shine. You've heard these songs? They have them also in Tamil, Telugu, like that, love songs. Or there was one love song, I will cross any mountain, I will climb, I will swim any river. What was it? There's no mountain too high and there's no river too deep that will keep me from getting to you. And that's not true. In the material world, if the mountain is high enough, if the river is deep enough, then the love is finished. So you'll see that as you progress in Krishna consciousness, the obstacles may get higher and higher and deeper and deeper. Because unless we have love that is willing to cross high mountains and swim deep rivers, we will not be happy. Because then it's not love. Then it's selfish. And Krishna wants us to be happy. So that's one lesson. One lesson is, how can I become a lover of Krishna even in this situation? And sometimes that's just, you know, if the body's very, very sick. Sometimes I've been very sick. And then, you know, just say, okay, Krishna, thank you, Krishna, I love you, Krishna, thank you, Krishna, I love you, Krishna, thank you, Krishna, I love you, Krishna. At least to remember, this is to develop love. There was a book published a couple years ago called Salted Bread. Yes. Anybody here read that book? Oh, very nice. So that book, I highly recommend that you read this book. It was It was in the 1980s when the devotees in the old Soviet Union were taking up Krishna consciousness. So they would get arrested for just having a little group, not even this big, 5-6 people, come to your house and have kirtan, you can go to jail. And you go on the street and you're selling books, you go to jail. So there were these stories about these two young men. They were very new devotees. They'd been devotees maybe 2 years. And there weren't very many books. They were Armenian. There weren't very many books translated into Armenian and Russian. So they hadn't even read very many of Prabhupada's books. Very new devotees. And they got arrested many times for distributing books. And every time they'd go back and they would again distribute books. So finally they got arrested and they were sent to prison for about 1.5-2 years. And at one point, these two young men were sent to Siberia. So I don't think any of you can imagine what is Siberia. You take as hot as it gets here and make it that much cold. 40 below zero. Instead of 40 above zero, 40 below zero. You know, 50 below zero, if when you spit, your spit turns to ice in the air. And if your nose is out in the air for just a few seconds, then finished. So that's where they were. They were in Siberia. So in Siberia, before Siberia, they were in a prison. There were some other devotees. But even then, it was very bad. But in Siberia, each of them was alone. So that means they had no association with the devotees. And not that they were just alone, they were with criminals. So we talk about bad association. Oh, I'm with materialistic people. But this was really bad association. So this is like murderers, rapists, child molesters, thieves. That was their association. So, okay, now you have to live in a room with murderers and rapists and thieves. That's your association. And, of course, there's no prasadam. Hardly even any vegetarian food. The only thing they could eat was bread. And that's not healthy, just to eat bread. So their teeth were falling out. Just bread with some salt. And they were not, so they had no devotee association, only bad association, really bad association. And no cleanliness in a prison, it's not very clean. They don't give you a bucket and a rag to clean. Rats and insects. And then you have to work for the government. And you don't get paid either. They had to work at a sewing machine making clothes for the army. And they'd have to sometimes work at night. It was very cold. Very hard work. No devotional service to do. No making garlands for the deities. No books. Couldn't have any Prabhupada's books. No kirtans. If they had a kirtan, they would be beaten. And really beaten. Not just like someone gives you a little hit. You know, big metal rod beating them. If they were caught chanting japa, they would be beaten also. And they would make beads out of bread. Not just they take bread. It would take 5 days. They have to make the bread ferment. It was a whole long process. And they would make little beads that they could hold in their hand. And when they were caught with the beads, the bead would be taken away and they would be beaten again. So no deities, no books, no prasadam, no devotees. And still they were Krishna conscious. Still they didn't get angry at Krishna. It was very interesting. They chant, and they weren't, when they went into the prison, they weren't even initiated. They hadn't even taken any vows. So they could say, well, I never took a vow. But still, they chanted 16 rounds every day and followed the four principles. In that situation, when for following you would be beaten. So that's not a fair weather friend. That's a real friend. So I love you, Krishna, even when you take everything away. Sometimes devotees say, oh, Krishna's taken everything away. I said, no, he hasn't taken everything away. For those people, even them, he didn't take away their body completely. For them, Krishna took everything away, and still they were devoted to Krishna. And many times in the prison, they felt great spiritual happiness. They were preaching to the other prisoners, which was very dangerous. Very dangerous. They would draw pictures on a napkin. You know what a napkin? And they would worship those pictures. All right, so let's see the next one. So to purify us of our bad qualities. Now one example is that we're getting back what we give. So the law of karma says that however I treat others, that is how I will be treated. You all know that, right? So what this means is, however I am being treated is how I am treating others. So let's say it in the opposite way. Whatever is happening to me now, that means I am doing this to somebody. So the law of karma is supposed to act like a mirror. Because we don't see ourselves very well. We usually think, I'm a very good person, I'm a very nice person, I'm a good devotee. I don't offend anybody. I don't mistreat anybody. I'm so wonderful. Why do people treat me badly? Poor me. So sometimes the obstacle is a mirror. That Krishna is saying, this is how you are treating others. Because the purpose of karma is to develop empathy. Do you all understand what empathy is? Where I feel what somebody else is feeling. Because usually, I am just feeling what I am feeling. I don't know what you are feeling. I don't know, and I usually don't care. I just care, what am I feeling? So the law of karma is to try to get to I care how you are feeling. So why do the people who eat meat, they have to take birth as an animal and be killed? So they know what it is like to be an animal and be killed. How does the animal feel? They have to experience it. So sometimes when we are very stubborn, Krishna has us experience something. So I suggest to many devotees that if your obstacle is that somebody is not treating you nicely, you can make an experiment and you can ask Krishna, but you have to ask sincerely. Please show me if there's any way I am treating anybody else like this. Because usually we think, no, someone is treating me this way and I think I never do this. Do you all have this experience? Someone is cheating me, or somebody is being cruel to me, or inconsiderate, or disrespectful, and I'm thinking, I'm not like this. I don't do this. So you can ask Krishna, please show me any time I do this. You can ask him like you figure you are doing it. Krishna, please show me. Sometime when I am treating somebody in a similar way. And I have seen many times Krishna does show. And it often is very surprising. Oh, I didn't know I was doing this. There's a saying, Atmavan Mandite Jagat. I see everything just from my point of view. I don't understand how someone is hurt by my actions. I don't understand how they are feeling. So you ask Krishna to show you. And sometimes it may be to get this empathy. So some of our obstacles are like that. Sometimes it may be to give us some incentive to increase our desire to love Krishna. It's very common. Like I said, there's two people. One person only worships God when they're happy. One person only worships God when they're unhappy. So if we are the kind of person who becomes more devoted when we are suffering, Krishna may give us some suffering. So if we don't like that, then we should become devoted when there's no suffering. There's another reason for that also. So it may be to increase our devotion, maybe to increase our seriousness. Just like if there's going to be a big exam at school. So the good teacher will give you some small exams first. And usually those small exams, they may not count for practice. Right? In America, you have to take this big, big exam to get into university called the SAT. So before you take the SAT, you take the PSAT, the practice SAT. You can practice. So Krishna will give us tests to practice because all of us have a big exam coming. You know what this big exam is, right? Death is coming. And maybe it's coming today. One time I said this to my Gurukul students and one mother called me. She was very angry. But I said, it's true. Maybe death is coming today. What can I do? We don't know. In the school, the exam, they give you a notice. The exam will be on this date at this time. But we don't have a notice. Some of us will get a notice. Some of us will get a notice. The doctor will say, okay, you have 3 weeks. But some of us will not get a notice. So Krishna is giving us practice exams. So one reason for the obstacles is we can practice. Don't you want to practice? So death is very difficult time. Death is when we see our whole life and our attachments are tested. So I give this example a lot, that I was taking my students on a field trip. Do you know what is a field trip? You go out of the school for some study. So we were coming back and we saw this smoke in the sky. And the students said, oh, we want to go see. And there was a big building on fire, 8 apartments, 8 flats. And next to the building, there was one young woman, 25, 30 maybe, and she had three little children next to her, and no shoes, no purse. So when the building's on fire, she grabbed her children. So if you might say, oh, most important is my deities, but if your building's on fire, would you grab your deities or would you grab your money? You understand? That is a test. You can say, oh, it's Krishna, I love Krishna, I love Krishna. Yes, it's Krishna, it's Krishna. But when the house is on fire, that is the real test. Where is your love? This lady, she didn't take her money, she didn't take her silver, she didn't take her this, that, just children. So that is the time of death. The body is on fire, and you try to grab what you care about. So many times these obstacles are like little practice death. Some great problem in our life. Where do I go? What do I grab? Do I sit and eat? Do I sit and watch television? Do I cry to my friends? Where do I go for my shelter? Do I go shopping? What's my shelter? So these obstacles are sometimes like that. So we can see, what is my shelter? Where do I go? Do I go to Krishna? Do I go to Guru? Do I go to the Shastra? Do I chant? I knew one devotee, whenever there was a disturbance, he would always chant. As soon as he was disturbed, pick up his beads, just chant. So then another reason for an obstacle can be to change something in our behavior. And the way I think of it like just like the road. The road became a big hole and there was only this much path. That was the only way you couldn't go any other way. You just couldn't. Everything else was just a hole. One side, there was no place to walk. Other side, only this much space. So if you wanted to get through, you had to go there. You didn't want to go there because it was sand and it wasn't stable. But there was no... Either you had to turn around or you had to take that way. So sometimes Krishna puts us in situations where the only way we can go forward in our Krishna consciousness is to develop some quality that we are not using. And that we don't want to develop. Maybe I don't want to develop humility. Oh, it's humility. Too much trouble. If I become humble, then everybody will be mean to me. I don't want to be humble. So I'll pretend to be humble. Oh, yes, yes, Prabhu. I am so fine. I am this, but actually, not even one speck of humility. So Krishna then may put me in a situation where the only way I can be happy is to be humble. Like I often say about having children, when you're a mother, a real mother, a biological mother, when you have children, so your choices are you give your children to somebody else, you become a crazy person, or you become patient. Correct? That's all. There's not another option. You have to become, if you want to be happy, you have to become patient. Or else you give your children to someone else, say you take care of them. You get some servants and watch your children. Or you'll become crazy. You have to become patient. You have to become sacrificing. If you're going to be not even a good mother, if you're going to be just even a passable mother, just passing grade as a mother, not A grade, just C grade, you have to develop a mood of sacrifice and patience, or you'll become so unhappy. So Krishna often puts us in situations like that. Some very difficult person in our life, some very difficult circumstance, and I keep wanting to fix the other person. But maybe it's I have to get something. Maybe I have to learn patience. Maybe I have to learn humility. Maybe I have to learn forgiveness. I had a very funny conversation with one lady. who often calls me up to complain about her husband, that he's not Krishna conscious enough, and that the reason she's not Krishna conscious, it's all his fault. So at least every 2-3 months she's contacting me, that all her spiritual problems are her husband's fault. So she was telling me, she said, my husband doesn't have any job right now. He hasn't made any money for a while, and he's tried this way and that way. And I told him, now you have to try something new. You have to get a new strategy. You understand strategy? A new way to do things. So I'm listening to her, and then she's telling me, and I don't know what to do with my husband. I have tried this thing and that thing. I said, oh, so you need a new strategy. She said, what? No, that was my husband who needed a new strategy. So if we are trying something and it's not working, not working, not working, not working, not working, then you need a new strategy. Just like I was saying before with language. So if I am saying something in English and you don't understand, if I say it more, you will not understand. Or if I say it louder. So we used to watch these Hindi devotional movies like Mahabharata and Ramayana in our Gurukula, and we would watch the ones with English subtitles. So you were hearing the English, hearing the Hindi, and reading the English. So one time someone lent me a tape, but it wasn't with the English, it was only Hindi. So I put it in the machine and I turn it on and I think, oh, it's not loud enough, I can't understand it. it's only Hindi. So you see this happens very often. I see it very often. Somebody will be speaking to me, it happened to me in Vrindavan at least 100 times. Someone is talking to me in Hindi, I say, Hindi nahi. And then they just talk louder. So often with our obstacles, it's like that. I'm trying something to go through the obstacle, around the obstacle, and it's not working. And I just keep doing the same things over and over again, stronger and stronger and stronger. And I don't think, maybe I need to try something completely different. And I might think, well, I don't know any different thing. Then you pray to Krishna, you ask the devotees, what different thing could I be doing? And usually it's some quality in me I have to develop. Usually it's like that. Another reason for obstacles can be to make us realize, for whose happiness am I working? This is something like the fair weather friend. But I see, oh, I'm really only serving Krishna for my happiness. It trains us to serve Krishna for his happiness. Again, that's the only way I can be happy. This is the secret. As soon as I'm working for myself, I'm miserable. And as soon as I'm working for Krishna, I'm happy. See, materially it doesn't work like that. Materially, if I'm working for my boss, that doesn't make me happy. In this world, if you work to try to please somebody else, I promise you, you'll become disappointed. If you are trying to please your parents, your husband, your children, your boss, you will become disappointed. You'll become heartbroken. You know, you'll sacrifice your whole life. Let me please my parents, let me please my in-laws, let me please my husband, let me please my children, let me please my temple authorities, let me please... Your heart will break. It will break. You'll become very sad and bitter, maybe angry, very disappointed. Because that is not the dharma that will satisfy the self. So we think serving Krishna is also going to be like that. We think, if I try to please Krishna, then I will also become heartbroken and bitter and disappointed. I have to take care of me. It doesn't work like that. And Prabhupada gives the example, you know, just like you have to put food in the mouth. If I take this water and I just pour it on my hand, I'll still be thirsty. If I want my hand to have moisture, I have to put the water in my mouth. So actually, I'm part of Krishna. And therefore, if I serve Krishna, I'll become happy. So sometimes the obstacles is to push us to that place. To push us to that place where I really am working to please Krishna. Of course, when I'm working to please Krishna, I will serve my parents and my husband and my children nicely, but to please Krishna. Not exactly to please them. Little difference. Little difference, big difference. Little difference in mentality, big difference in results. If I see I am pleasing Krishna, my husband is my service, then I'm happy. If I think I'm pleasing my husband because he's God, then you'll be miserable. I am pleasing my mother and father because that is, I am pleasing Krishna. Not exactly I'm pleasing my mother and father. So the obstacles sometimes are to show us that. Wait a minute. I've actually been only trying to please myself. And now Krishna is stopping that. So I have some suggestions here. Yeah. On the top of the backside of the paper. So these are some specific strategies. This is not a complete list. And you may find some of this helpful, some of this not helpful. And if you find some other things very helpful, please tell me and I'll add it to my list. So to think, do I do this for other people? And that you can ask Krishna. Don't just think with your mind, because your mind will say, oh no, I never do this. You ask Krishna to reveal in the heart, do I create this kind of obstacle for others? You have to ask very sincerely, am I loving Krishna unconditionally or only when it's pleasing? Is there a better way to do what I want to do? Maybe Krishna is showing me that I'm not doing this in the best way. So I had this happen. Some of you saw the books that I was showing earlier? Any of you there? So we were trying to do books like this maybe for 15 years. And there kept being obstacles. And it would stop. Completely stop. And finally I saw, oh, that's not the way Krishna wants it done. Because we were trying to do it, some rich person would give a lot of money, and we were trying. Well, that wasn't how Krishna wanted it to be done. It just didn't work that way. Krishna wanted it to be done a different way. Where we just went with no money and no people and just started. So you can ask, is there a better way to do this? And maybe it's a way that doesn't make any sense to you. So that way didn't make any sense to me. I thought, no, first you have the money, you have the people, you build an office. But that wasn't the way Krishna wanted it done. Just like Prabhupada coming to America. I mean, who would start a movement like this? From a business perspective, that was madness. 70 years old. Think of people you know who are 70 years old. Maybe some of you are 70 years old. So for 70 years old, go to a country that where you don't know anybody, you have no money, you have a place to stay only for 1 month, you speak that language with a heavy accent. The only thing he had to sell were the early books. They were not even printed nicely. If you saw the... Did any of you see the first books? First Bhagavatams Prabhupada brought? Paper quality was not good. Spelling was wrong. Grammar was wrong. The printing was crooked. No pictures. That was all he had to sell. So who would start a worldwide movement like this? But that Krishna wanted to show it can be done in this way. So Prabhupada kept getting obstacles for doing it another way. He tried. Prabhupada tried doing it other ways. Didn't work. So sometimes Krishna says, no, there's a better way. And the better way may not make any sense to us. We may think, this is crazy, Krishna. Why do you want me to do it this way? It doesn't make any sense. If you really want me to do it, you should be giving me, you know, $5 million and airplane tickets, flying first class to America and have the president greet me. Instead, you're making me go on a cargo ship with no money and some old Indian printed books, no friends. But Krishna wanted it done that way. So sometimes we have to explore. Maybe there's a completely different way. So somebody may say, okay, I'll change my situation. Sometimes an obstacle is Krishna wants us to change our situation. Maybe we're supposed to change our ashram, get married, or maybe we're supposed to become renounced. Maybe we're supposed to live in the temple, or we're supposed to live in this place, or we're supposed to do some change. But be very careful that you don't think, oh, just by changing my situation, everything will be good. Usually a change of situation comes second. The first thing comes change in mentality. So you may change the way you think, your understanding. You may change your behavior. You might change your attitude towards other people. You think, what is there in me that I can improve? And be grateful that Krishna is teaching me. To always be grateful. Tate nukamtam sukshmikshmanam. That when there's difficulty, we offer moral obeisances to Krishna. Oh, Krishna, you're kindly teaching me. You're kindly helping me. It's very easy to say in a class and very difficult to do when there's a problem. And you think, this will help me to serve Krishna better. And there's an amazing quote here. Actually, I already told you the story of the pencil. I should move it away from summary because I told it earlier. There's a very interesting quote here where Prabhupada says, being pleased with the devotee, the Lord turns all his material impediments into spiritual service. So our obstacles become turned into service. So that's a very deep meditation. What does that mean? So I'm not going to try to answer that, but I'm going to suggest, I'm going to give you a home play assignment, that you meditate on what does this quote from Srila Prabhupada mean? That all of our impediments, you know what is an impediment? An obstacle. All of our obstacles become turned into service. So I'm sure that we will all get some chance to practice these things. One thing is that if you practice this, it will get easier and easier and easier. And gradually, you will come to see the obstacles as spiritual service. You will see them, here's an opportunity to increase my love for Krishna, to increase my dependence on Krishna. I mean, like a very simple thing. So, I didn't know I was giving the Bhagavatam class this morning. Nobody told me. So I was just sitting down to take care of my deities, and one devotee comes in, you're supposed to be giving the class. And then you called me on the phone, I'm walking out the door. So I had to say to my deities, I'll come back. I was just getting out all the paraphernalia. So usually when I give a Bhagavatam class, I like to prepare. I usually like at least 15 minutes. I mean, sometimes 2-3 hours. I'll go look up the commentaries. I'll see if Prabhupada gave a lecture on the verse. I'll look for what is the main idea. So in one sense, you could say that's an obstacle. It's a difficulty. It's not the way I want to go. I want to go on the road and there's a hole in the road. And I was thinking also, oh my God, I'm going to be the first woman ever giving class in this temple, and I've not had any time to prepare. Oh my God. Then probably I will give a terrible class, and then they will say, see, that's why we had no women giving class in this temple. But then you can think this is an opportunity to surrender to Krishna more. So I was just like, Prabhupada, you're going to have to give this class because I'm useless. That makes sense, right? That's a very simple example. But you can say, okay, this is some difficulty, more chance to surrender to Krishna. Less chance I can think that I'm the doer. Otherwise I can think, oh, I have done this preparation and I am so this and that, right? Is that clear? So with all of our obstacles, it's like that. You can turn your obstacles into service. Sometimes it's easy to see how to do it, sometimes it's not easy to see how to do it. So it is now 3:40. Should we stop now? Where's our acharya? Tarani Radha. Hey, Tarani Radha Devi Dasi. So should we stop now or should we have questions? Okay, until what time?
4:00.
About 4:00?
4:00.
Okay. I want to hear one of your classes.
Oh, I don't give any.
Oh, you should. After you wrote me that email with that one quote from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I thought, this lady, she's very smart. Because that's the only quote for that, we won't discuss that argument, but the only quote I know of in favor of that argument. He found the one quote. So I was thinking, this lady, she's very intelligent and she's a scholar. She knows the Shastra. And so many of you are, I've heard so many of you, you are teachers of mathematics, and I'm very impressed. Very well educated, very intelligent. So that gives you a big responsibility in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. If you're given a lot, then you're expected to do a lot. I don't think I've been any place where I've seen so many of the ladies who are so highly educated. I mean, it's just practically everybody I talk to here, I am this. So please do something wonderful for Lord Chaitanya. Okay, questions, comments? Yes.
When we have some questions, you said we can ask to Krishna. How do you know this answer is coming from Krishna or this is coming from my speculation?
Oh, such a good question. Did everybody hear that?
Yes.
If you ask Krishna, how do you know it's coming from Krishna? So I don't know if you will like my answer. But you will know. Just like when you're reading something in the books, and you read something and you get, it's like light. All of a sudden there's a light. Jnana dipena bhashvata. He lights up your consciousness. And you know immediately it's Krishna, correct? But I'm just asking, is that correct? Have you had this experience?
Maybe like a highly spiritual person.
No.
I'm so fallen.
No. Stop this.
I don't know if you differentiate.
I'm just asking you a simple question.
Yes.
Okay. You've read Prabhupada's books.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Sometime when you were reading Prabhupada's books, maybe not all the time, but sometimes, you read something, and it's like there's a light that goes on inside your heart. Have you had this experience?
I have it, but I don't know whether it's...
Just answer the question. Now you are on the mental platform completely. Have you had this experience? You read something in Prabhupada's books, and you feel like there's a light inside your heart, and you understand something. In our ISKCON language, we say, I had a realization.
Yes.
Okay? We have all had this experience. Sometimes it happens when you are reading Prabhupada's books. Sometimes it happens when you are chanting japa. Sometimes it happens when you are seeing the deities. Sometimes it happens when you are talking to some non-devotee on the street.
Yes.
Sometimes it just happens. You're just doing some service and all of a sudden...
Yes.
And how do you feel? You feel that all the gates of your body are illumined by knowledge. Everyone has had this experience at least once, probably many times. And when you have that experience, it feels very different from the mind. Feels very, very different from the mind. Just like you can get mango juice from a box. Right? They put mango juice in a box. And you can take fresh mango and make mango juice. Does it taste different?
Yes.
Anybody can tell what is the difference. Or like now I'm speaking without a microphone. If I speak with a microphone, can you hear the difference?
Yes.
Yes. You can hear. What is the difference between a live voice and a mechanically amplified voice? The mind is a machine. Krishna is alive. When the mind is saying something, it's a machine. When Krishna is saying something, it's full of life. Now, of course, your realization should be backed up by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So if you have some realization, oh, I should push you off the roof, then maybe you're just crazy. But if your realization is confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then you're 100% sure it's Krishna. So pratyakshavagamam dharmam, it's directly experienced. Prabhupada said you don't need a certificate from others. Like I was eating lunch, and this lovely lady, she wanted to feed me twice as much. And I said, no, I'm full, because I can tell when I'm full. I know, I can directly experience that my stomach is full. She doesn't know if my stomach is full or not, but I know. So I guarantee you that when Krishna is talking to you, you always know. I guarantee you. What happens is afterwards you doubt. At the time, you always know. Always. And then the mind says, maybe it wasn't Krishna. Don't listen to that. That's not any good. The mind has been guarding the false ego for billions and billions and billions of years. So just like, you know, I have here. But just like when you have a curtain over a window, and sometimes you may open the curtain a little bit then close. They do this with some temples. They like open the curtain for a minute to see the deity and then they close again. Or some of these darshans you have here in South India, where they have these little tiny temple rooms, you know, this big in front of the deity. And you come and you see like Ranganath or, and just like, you know. Okay. And there's, they have a hired yeller. They have a hired screaming man. That's his seva. You know, you say, what is your job? Oh, my job is, and I'm an accountant, I'm a teacher. What is your job? I yell at people at the temple. And this man all day, he was just yelling when we were in Sri Rangam, you know. He's just, we got this some special darshan because I was with Rompad Swami. So we were there by the deities for maybe 10 minutes. But everybody else, he's just like, bah, 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 bah. I looked at him and I went. So often our realization is like that. It's like the darshan of Balaji. <You know? laughs> Oh! Oh! No, it's not like that. So how do you know it's Krishna? When it's Krishna, the quality is very different from the mind. Quality is completely different. It's like, how do you know a fresh mango from an old mango? Quality is different. And then it's confirmed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So both things have to be there. Both things have to be there. Mind has a mechanical quality to it. So that's a very good question. I know that this is a long topic. This could take several hours, and I don't have several hours right now. But the secret when you ask Krishna is really to listen. Really to listen. And to accept it. The mind will, if you ask Krishna, what is my real problem here? What I'm telling you now, this is, I'm giving you right now a very, like the very valuable diamond. When I'm telling you right now. So if you have some obstacle and you say to Krishna, what is my lesson? If you really want to know, if you're not like, what is my lesson, Krishna, okay. If you actually want to know, Krishna will tell you. Of course he will tell you. If you're in an ordinary school and you ask the teacher, what would you like me to learn? The good teacher there will always tell you. Good teacher. Maybe some bad teachers will not tell you. Be quiet, sit down. But no, good teacher, they'll always tell you. Krishna will tell you. I mean, he'll always tell you. And then you have to act on it. The mind is ready with its army. That wasn't really Krishna. first thing the mind will say, that wasn't really, you know when it happens that it's really Krishna. You know for sure, there's no doubt. And a few minutes later or an hour later, the mind will say, maybe that wasn't really Krishna. And then the mind will say, well, maybe it was really Krishna, but you can't do that. It's too hard. And if you did that, this bad thing would happen, and that bad thing would happen, and this terrible thing would happen, so you just can't do that. That's for advanced devotees, this thing Krishna's telling you. Of course, Krishna's very smart, and he's not going to tell you something unless it's right for you now. Or the mind will say, oh, that's too big of a problem, I can't fix that. No, you don't fix it, Krishna fixes it. Or the mind will tell you, oh, that's such a small problem, that couldn't be what's making this big obstacle. That's such a little problem. So the mind has certain stock things that it will tell you. And you have to, as Prabhupada said, you ignore the mind. You just say, okay, Krishna, if you're telling me that I must do this, then that's what I'm going to do. And then wonderful things will happen in your life. Then you'll have miracles happen in your life. Real miracles. Beyond what you can imagine. And as you do that, then you will get better and better at recognizing what is Krishna and what is the mind. If you become, we used to have a garden and we also had some fruit trees. When you become accustomed to eating fresh food, then you can immediately recognize this food, they've shipped it from, you know, Africa or Chile or something. You know? Immediately. There's no taste. So the more you're habituated to responding to Krishna, the more you can recognize what is the mind, because it's a machine. The mind's a machine. There's no rasa in the mind. There's no light. Sometimes there's passion. Someone says, yes, that's what I have to do. But there's no light. In Krishna, it's again a deep pain of bhasha. It's light. It's sweet. Sometimes it's heavy, but it's sweet. The mind can also be righteous. Do you understand? I'm right. Krishna's not like that. When you get some realization that's the mind, it's more about how wonderful you are and how you're going to fix everything. And now you're going to tell everybody what's wrong with them and what's right with you. The mind, that's if you get some energy from the mind. With Krishna, it's not like that. With Krishna, it's very sweet and it brings humility. It's like the sun coming up on a path. But you have to practice. If you want to be able to recognize, you have to practice responding to Krishna. Then he'll talk to you more, right? If someone asks you for advice, and when you give them advice, they listen to you, then you'll give them more advice. If you give someone advice, and when you give them advice, they don't listen to you, you will give them less advice. I have this one girl, she'll say, oh, Urmila, just tell me what to do. So if I give her advice, she never listens to anything I say. Never. So finally I said, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. And now she's very angry with me. But Krishna's also like that. Does that help you? Actually, it is your mind saying, I don't know the difference. You do know the difference. You do know. Pratyakshavagamam dharmam. You can directly perceive it. So Krishna's not saying this, he's not saying this only for the great devotees. If you want to become a great devotee, then you have to respond to Krishna now. Yes?
Actually, obstacles in Krishna consciousness is actually not due to somebody else. It's due to our own self. But when we are
that we can see in our chanting. For some time we are regularly chanting, sometimes we try to lose interest in chanting, or we are like very lethargic and it's just only chanting in just 16 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Then how can we improve the chanting?
How can you improve the quality of your
and
chanting?
Is that because of any offenses, or it's the, or because of a mind?
This is a whole other class.
Yes. Yes.
How to have good chanting. Yes. That is another at least 1 or 2 hour class. Let's see if I can give you a 1 or 2 minute answer. We will be steady in our chanting after the modes of passion and ignorance are finished. Nishtha comes after passion and ignorance are finished. So until passion and ignorance are finished, our bhakti will be unsteady. Must be. Must be. So until we are at nishtha, to some extent we have to tolerate. At least we can be steady in the externals. But that was the quote I gave you this morning in the other class, that the modes of material nature, sometimes there's illumination, sometimes there's attachment, sometimes there's delusion. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, or long for them when they disappear. So the mind and the body are going to be sometimes illuminated, sometimes attached, and sometimes in delusion. When one is above the modes of material nature, one is not disturbed by this. One remains neutral. Until we are above the modes of passion and ignorance, we'll become disturbed by this. So the cure is to be patient and to put your energy into becoming free of the anarthas. The anarthas are attracting the modes of passion and ignorance to cover us. That is a whole science. Because I want to enjoy the world, I cannot enjoy the world in truth. This world is not an enjoyable object for me. It is an object of service for Krishna. Just like if I say, I want to enjoy this. See? I suffered. Very simple. Exactly like that. This is not my enjoyable object. You like that? This is not my enjoyable object. It doesn't belong to me. And as soon as I try to enjoy it, then I got wet. It's all right. It's so hot. I'm sure I'll dry it in 5 minutes. It's fine to get wet in this climate. Doesn't matter. So as soon as I want to enjoy the world, then I suffer. It's not mine. So I can't enjoy in truth. If I see this world as it is, if I see the truth, that means sattva-gun. Sattva means truth. If I see the world in truth, I can't enjoy it. It's not mine to enjoy. Do you know they say that a thief, if they look at your money, they don't think it's your money. They think it's their money. They actually think like that. Did you know that? The psychology of a thief. Because if it's your money, how can they take it? It's yours. So in order to think that this world is mine, I have to be covered with illusion. And it is this covering of illusion that makes me unsteady in my bhakti. So how can I get this covering of illusion off? I have to give up this idea that I am the enjoyer. So that's our whole process of bhakti, is meant for that purpose. And once I let go of this, once I say, oh, Krishna's the enjoyer, then I don't need passion ignorance anymore. There's no use anymore. Then I can see things in truth. And once I see things in truth, then I am anishta, then I am fixed. And then the modes of thee be there, but they'll not disturb. So you be patient and tolerant. Prabhupada says with these modes one should be neutral. Some days I can concentrate, some days I can't concentrate. Some days I feel enthusiastic, some days I don't feel enthusiastic. That means you're under the modes. That means the modes are coming and pushing you this way and this way and this way and this way. Okay, that's happening because I'm still impure. So I have to be a little patient. Like if you go to the doctor, usually you don't get cured in 1 minute, you know. They may say to take this medicine for 10 days or take this medicine for 3 months. But you should be seeing that gradually you're getting better. That you should be seeing. If you're not gradually getting better, then we really have a problem. You should be seeing that gradually you're getting better. At least you can become detached and see this isn't me. It's just the mind and the body. It's not me. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. And really have a desire to get rid of this false ego. And we do that by becoming attached to Krishna. Like those stupid songs, you know, there's no mountain too high. Or because they're in love. They're thinking I'm in love. So if I feel a little bit of affection for Krishna, then I'm willing to let go of my anger and greed and lust. If I don't have any affection for Krishna, why should I let go of it? So develop your attachment to Krishna. Hear a lot about Krishna. Develop your attachment to Krishna. Be patient. Recognize that this coming and going is the modes of nature. It's not you. Sometimes, just like sometimes the body is healthy, sometimes the body is sick. Sometimes the body is full of energy, sometimes the body is tired. Sometimes the mind is also the same way. Mind also, sometimes it's full of energy and enthusiasm, and sometimes it's just like, it's not me. And keep developing that attachment for Krishna, that attachment for Krishna, that attachment for Krishna. Maya Shakti Amanaparta. 7.1, the verse that Prabhupada quoted more often than any other verse, Bhagavad Gita 7.1. And become so attached to Krishna that then, you know, okay, it's time to give up my lust. Oh, great, anything for you, Krishna. Time to give up your envy. Great, let's get rid of it. And then as you give them up, no more need of passion and ignorance. And then you're in truth, and then you can be steady. So it's not a mechanical trick. People are looking for some mechanical trick. Maybe if I just sit straight when I'm chanting japa. Maybe if I always chant, you know, from 5 to 6:30 in the morning. It's not just some external trick you can do. Those things are good. They're helpful, but that's not the point. Maybe if I chant all my 16 rounds at the same time. If you have little babies, forget that. You know, maybe if I do this way, that way, externally, that's not, it's getting rid of the anartas. That's the anartas are the problem. The anartas are acting like magnets that are attracting passion and ignorance. Oh, 5 minutes. Was that all right? That's the best I can do without like a 2-hour class.
Maybe since we're talking about obstacles, like when we are preaching to girls, they start progressing gradually and things are happening well. But the biggest, one of the big obstacles, what I have come across is like they get into a relationship.
How strange.
At that time, like the girls, they want to be in Krishna consciousness, but they also want to be involved with a boy.
Of course.
Yeah.
So what is the solution? You all know what the solution is to this. What is the solution to this? Come on.
Make the boy Krishna.
Yes. Get married to a nice devotee boy. I mean, that's the easy.
No, Mataji, they are studying in a college. They find somebody there in the college. It's just 6 months or 8 months in Krishna consciousness, and then they find somebody else.
This is a problem. What to do, you know? I mean, very simple.
Sorry, I'm not talking about the devotee children. I'm talking about the girls who are just new to ISKCON.
Some devotee children also have the same problem. But that's why in every culture in the world, People got married when they were young. Sorry. I'm very sorry. Please excuse me. I hope you will invite me back. This idea of getting married late, this is, it's actually madness. Just study, 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 and plan to get married when you're 25 or 30. It's madness. It doesn't respect our biology and our psychology. For men also. It's not the way our bodies and minds are designed. It's like if I said, okay, we are going to have breakfast every day at 2 in the afternoon. So you will probably steal some food. Correct?
Yes.
You'll steal. Or breakfast is at 4 in the afternoon. Then you'll definitely steal. You'll be hungry. Then you'll just go in the kitchen and you'll take something. Or if we say, okay, everybody has to fast for 5 days. So when you tell people, don't get married until you're 25 or 30, it's exactly like that. You know, the woman's peak fertility is, I think, 18 to 20. For a man, it's like 20 to 22. So that's when the desires are the strongest. What to do? It's biology. What's really funny, you might know what's really funny, is when women become medical doctors. Please, my apologies to any of you who are becoming medical doctors. So they become medical doctors, and when they become medical doctors, they don't have their first baby until they're like 35 years old. And I'm thinking, they're going to school and they're studying biology. It's a crazy society. Crazy society. You know why they're pushing late marriage? You know why? I want you to know the real reason why. Several reasons. They're trying to reduce the population. So if you have late marriage, if you have your first child when you're 25 or 30 years old, first of all, you may not have any children because you may have lost your fertility. And if you do have children, you won't have that many because you've lost now 10, 15 years of your fertility. So you have to have less children if your first baby is born when you're older like that. So that's one reason. They want to reduce the population. So why do they want to reduce the population? Do you know what? We went to an ecological conference in Hungary. Our ISKCON has a farm in Hungary, an eco-farm, where we're working towards being self-sufficient. We're growing our own food there. So the devotees had a big eco-conference, and they had devotees speaking and also non-devotee speaking. They had this big professor, big Hungarian professor, very famous in Hungary for ecology. So I don't know if maybe I was the only American there. Of course, he didn't know I was there. I was in the back. He didn't know me. So he was criticizing the Americans. He was saying, that's one of the favorite pastimes on the planet, you know, to criticize the Americans. So he was criticizing and saying, these Americans, they're only 5% of the world population and they're stealing 50% of the world resources, you know, and I'm always kind of looking and what am I have, you know. And then he was saying that this, to live at this standard cannot be done with all these people on the planet. But we want to live at this standard. We in Hungary, we want to live at this American standard, but we cannot do it because there's not enough to share. So we should have fewer people. This was what he said. So we should have fewer people, and that way everybody can live on an American standard. So their reason for wanting a small population is greed. There's enough resources to feed everybody on the planet. You know how much food they're throwing away in different parts of the world? They're greedy. Prabhupada often says, you know, that Krishna won't maintain a large population of demons, but he'll maintain a large population of devotees. And there's another reason why they're pushing late marriages, because that way, then the men can freely enjoy illicit sex. Because they've convinced the girls, no, don't get married young, because then you won't have a career, and you won't become developed, and you won't really develop yourself. and you won't have a chance to find out where you are. And they know, many of these girls, they're not going to be just chased until they're 30 years old. They know. And then those girls will be available for them to exploit. I'm very sorry. As I say, I hope you invite me back. So the real solution is that people get married when they're young. That's the real solution. And until you do that, you will keep having this problem. The problem will not go away because you're dealing with biology. You're dealing with something that you can't make some policy or some cultural change that's going to change how our bodies are meant to function, how our minds are meant to function. So as long as we have this very artificial idea, then there'll be so much suffering. So now go a little bit on the positive side. So the idea is that this system of society and Krishna consciousness, they were given together in the Shastra. We're actually very fortunate. And Christianity, Buddhism, Islam, they don't have a social system that comes from their Shastra that supports their spirituality, but we do. So this idea of four varnas and four ashramas, it's meant to support spiritual growth in the society. So the vast majority of people should become grihasthas. Men and women, not only women. You can't have only women become grihasthas unless every man marries 100 women. So the men should also be married early. Prabhupada was saying by 24 all the men should be married. Maximum. Prabhupada was 22. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was 14. Bhaktivinoda was 14. Gandhi was 13. So the men were also marrying very young. So that system supports spiritual life, and this modern system does not support spiritual life. This modern system supports exploitation and heartache. One of my sons said to me, these people, they have, you know, this boyfriend and this boyfriend, this boyfriend. He said it's like they've been married and divorced 10 times by the time they're 20. And they are preparing their psychology for marriage and divorce. So what to do? Oh, now, on the positive side, you can be Krishna conscious in any situation. If you can be Krishna conscious in a Soviet labor camp in Siberia, so you can be Krishna conscious even in a very difficult material situation. Krishna consciousness is not dependent on having proper varna and ashrama. Krishna consciousness is not dependent on having a civilized society. Otherwise, you couldn't be Krishna conscious in America. No, we're not that bad, really. Americans have their good points. Seriously, we really do. So you can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance, but if you want to have the most favorable situation, then people should marry young and have their babies when they're young. So I'm very sorry to inform you of this. I'm very sorry to inform you of this, but it's a fact. I'm very happy, myself and my daughter and at least one of my daughters-in-law, they did this. So I got married at 18. I had my first baby at 19.
Oh, yes.
Hey, you know what? I have a PhD. I did years and years and years of service. I did not only wash dishes and change diapers. I've done many, many other things. My life is not finished because I got married at 18 and had a baby at 19. And my next baby, I was 23, next one, 26. My daughter got married at 18. Have you met my daughter? Were you here when... did Bir Krishna Swami come here on his South Indian tour? Did he come here? No, he didn't come here, so he didn't meet my daughter. They went to Tirupati and Sri Rangam, but they didn't come. Well, if any of you on Facebook? Yes. Any of you use Facebook? Okay, so then you can meet my daughter on Facebook. And my daughter-in-law, when she got married, she was only 16, almost 17. My daughter's name, Champakalata Fiorentino, is my daughter, and my daughter-in-law is on Facebook as Nama P. Best, but her name is Nitya, her initiate name is Nitya. So she got married that when my son was 20, she was 16. She was almost 17. Then she had her first baby when she was 18. Actually, she had her 18th birthday, and then her baby was born the next day. And now she's expecting her 8th child. She has 4 sons and 3 daughters. I don't know what this one will be. She doesn't get a sonogram to see. She homeschools her children, and she's also going to college. She's almost finished now her bachelor's in social work. She does a lot of counseling. So her life is not finished. She's a very nice devotee, very successful materially. So this idea that if you get married young and have your babies young, your life is finished, is propaganda. It's just not true. It's not true. And now my children are grown up. My grihastha life is finished. My husband took vanaprastha. And now I'm still young enough that I can do preaching. And not, if I started my household life late, then by the time my household life finished, I'd be so old. What could I do? And then my mind is satisfied. I had my grihastha life. I can be peaceful. And I'm seeing, so scientific, if you want to be renounced, you go through grihastha life. That's the shastra. I'm seeing the shastra is so intelligent. Krishna is so intelligent. If you think when you're young, I'll be renounced, that's not the time. Maybe for 1 out of 1,000 people. Few people can actually be renounced when they're young. There are some people, some exceptions. But for most people, you do it, and then you see. Oh, grihastha life is not all good, and it's not all bad. It just is. And you're peaceful. So that's the solution. And without that solution, there's nothing else going to work. You're not going to find some artificial... You know, you create one problem, then you solve that with another created thing, and another created thing, and another... Right? One artificial thing, another artificial thing, another artificial thing, another artificial thing. But anyway, you can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance. Doesn't matter. Some circumstances are better, they're easier. If you lead a life that's in harmony with nature and biology, then you're also more in harmony with Krishna, because guess who created nature and biology? But even if you don't lead a life in harmony with nature, you can still be Krishna conscious. It's certainly possible. Krishna consciousness is not dependent on anything other than Krishna consciousness. Is that okay?
It's good, Mataji. And many of the girls are there, so I don't have to convince now.
Now none of them will come back.
Particularly my daughter, I've been telling her after your graduation I'll give you in marriage. She has been fighting with me. I think today she'll be convinced.
Oh, I don't know. I was also fighting because I was also raised in the same way. When I was a teenager was when the women's liberation thing started in America. When I was like 12, maybe it started. So I was also raised like that. And I didn't want to marry at all. No, not at all. Never. Why should I be burdened with some husband and children? Better to be free.
She's telling like that.
Of course.
I'll be like that.
Of course. Everybody wants freedom.
I asked the same thing to Bhanu Maharaj. After I got married, I was in 18, and I studied after that, after getting my kids. And I went and asked Bhanu Maharaj, I want to work. He asked me, why you want to work? I want to be a little bit free. I want to have, I wanted to have a freedom. And he didn't tell anything. He came and sat with Bhanu class, and I told him, I want to be independent. And he told, independentism for a Mataji is not less than prostitution.
Yeah, Prabhupada says it. But of course we want freedom. Prabhupada says the need of the soul is for freedom. What do we want freedom from, my dear friends? The modes of material nature is what you want freedom from. That's what you want freedom from. We all want to be free. Of course we want to be free. Prabhupada said that's our need. We need to be free, not just want. We need. So yes, of course we want to be free, but how to become free? That's another thing. But if you want to talk about materially being free, you see, everything has a price. This is beginning Bhagavad Gita, 3rd, 4th, 5th chapter Bhagavad Gita. Now we're going to another 4-hour class that I'll try to do in 5 minutes. So, but beginning of Bhagavad Gita is about yajna. I really wish I had a board now. Okay, so beginning, bottom is vikarma. Vikarma is I'll just steal. I will take material enjoyment and I'll not pay anything for it. No religion, no tapasya, no sacrifice, no price. I just take what I want. And of course, if you're stealing, you're in anxiety and you become punished. You don't even enjoy what you get. Right? So if I steal this bowl and I take it with me, I'll always be worried. Somebody will find, oh, that was the bowl from their house. And they'll see me someplace. I know that bowl looks very familiar, you know. So I'll always have some anxiety. So the karma person, they're always in anxiety. So next step is karma kanda, where you think, okay, I should do some religious thing to pay for what I want. I have some enjoyment, I should pay for it. So that's ritualistic religion. Then there's karma yoga. Karma yoga is I start having a relationship with Krishna. I'm not just paying something at the shop. I actually have a relationship. Jnana yoga, I start realizing that I'm a soul. Jnana yoga, I'm meditating on Krishna. Bhakti yoga, I have love. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Whatever you want, you have to pay for. This is a very simple principle. Whatever you want, you have to pay for. So if you really want freedom, my friends, material freedom, not talking about spiritual freedom, if you really want material freedom, you can go wherever you like. You can live wherever you want. There's a price. There's a price. You have to be a renunciate. The renunciates, the vanaprastas and the sannyasis, not the brahmacharis. Brahmacharis are tightly under in the guru's ashram. The vanaprastas and the sannyasis, they're freedom. They're freedom. They can travel where they like, they can go where they like, they can do where they like. Who's telling them what to do? Their guru is telling them what to do, but they're not under the control of society. And women can also be vanaprastas. You know that, right? You know there's women of vanaprastas in the Shastra? Yes, 4th canto, 7th canto. But there's a price for being a vanaprasta. You don't steal it. You know what's the price? You have to be willing to pay that price. If you're not willing to pay the price, guess what happens? You can't enjoy that freedom. Like if you steal something, you can't enjoy it. I mean, maybe you get some enjoyment. I stole it, you know? But then you can't really... you can't really enjoy it. The price for being a vanaprasta means you have no personal money. You don't have some job and some income and a home. Real vanaprasta is living in the forest. Or maybe you live with your children. Like where I'm staying, the mother is living upstairs. Children are taking care of her. She can do what she wants. You have to be renounced. You don't have possessions. You don't have a home. You don't have money. You have to spend all of your time in the benefit of the society. You know what you have to give up for freedom? Security. Security, I have my house, I have my 20 saris, and this sari is over here, and this sari is over here, and this sari is over here. I have this much money in the bank, I have this much money coming in. You have to sacrifice that. And if you're not willing to sacrifice that, then you're stealing your freedom. And you will not, then there'll be no pleasure in it. If you don't perform the yajna willingly, then everything becomes yajna. It's very interesting. If you perform the yajna willingly, joyfully, for Krishna, then Bhagavad Gita 4:24, everything becomes transcendental. The Jagya becomes, see, there's people that understand this. Then the Jagya becomes transcendental and there's no Jagya. Then there's no sacrifice anymore. And doing the sacrifice for Krishna with love, then there's no sacrifice. The sacrifice becomes my pleasure and the pleasure becomes my pleasure. So if you're not willing to sacrifice security, you have to sacrifice either your freedom for security or security for freedom. You have to make, you can't have both. And if you want to enjoy a man, if you want some man that says to you, you're so beautiful, then there's a sacrifice. Then you have to put up with a man. They're like from a different planet, you know. If you want some man who tells you you're beautiful and, oh, you're so beautiful and I will take care of you the rest of your life and I will love you and cherish you, then you have to deal with a man. And the male ego, they always want to be right, even when they're wrong. It's their ego. That's the jagya. And if you want to have money and you want to have your own kitchen and you want to have your own pictures on the wall and you want to have your own furniture, and you, then you have to pay the jagya. Just, you know, in modern society, people want, they want the happiness of the grihastha life and the happiness of the renounced order, and they don't want to pay the sacrifice for either one. They want all the freedom of being renounced. I'm not going to marry you, I'm not going to have children. Right? No commitment, no sacrifice. But they also want the happiness of the grihastha ashram. I'm going to have the happiness of some man that I can flirt with and maybe more. I'm going to have my own money, I'm going to have my own place, I'm going to have my own job. But I'm not going to do any of the tapasya. Then whole life becomes tapasya. It just doesn't work that way. Krishna says he creates, maintains, and destroys by penance only. There must be voluntary. If there's not voluntary tapasya, there'll be forced tapasya. And then people don't understand why they're so unhappy. So we see this both ways. We see there are grihasthas who try to get the pleasure of the renounced ashram. I've seen this in ISKCON. Yes, I'm grihastha, but I'm not going to have any children. I'm not going to earn any money. I'm just going to, you know, live in a little, live in my car or something like that. Go to all the festivals. So they're trying to steal the pleasure of the renounced ashram while they're in the grihastha ashram. And then you have people in the renounced ashram, they're trying to steal the pleasure of the grihastha ashram. Let me have a job, let me have a home, let me have a car, let me flirt with the opposite sex, let me, right? So if you really want the freedom of the renounced ashram, you have to pay the sacrifice. Then you will actually enjoy that freedom. But to do that when you're young, without going through the grihastha ashram, some people can do it. I have met some women who can do it. Actually do it, genuinely do it. But not many. So be honest. If we want to go to the absolute truth, Param Satvam, then we have to be truthful. Be truthful. If I want to enjoy pretty clothes and jewelry and some man looking at me and saying, oh, she's pretty, then be honest. And get your own man. And take care of him. And pick up his socks. And tell him he's a hero, even when he's not a hero. You know, and tolerate it. And pay the sacrifice. And you do that for Krishna. You're not doing it for the man. Don't do it for the man, then you'll be heartbroken. Do it for Krishna. Offer the sacrifice for Krishna. Krishna, I'm serving this man to make you happy. And then if you do that properly, the day will come that you will have that freedom and you will have it in a genuine way. You will have earned it.
Actually,
it will be yours.
If the man is happy only when we are not in Krishna consciousness.
That is a very hard obstacle. So So then if you're not yet married, you please find another man. And if you're already married, then you have to see it as one of these obstacles. What is Krishna trying to teach me? What is my lesson? What do I have to develop? That's a hard obstacle. But even the gopis had that problem. It's a hard obstacle. I'm not saying it's an easy obstacle. But if you're married to a man who opposes your Krishna consciousness, so then you have to think all these things we discussed today. What does Krishna want from me? What is my lesson? What qualities do I need to develop? Is that okay?
Mataji, how do we check on our spiritual progress?
How do you check on your spiritual progress? So there's descriptions in the Shastra, what are the signs of spiritual progress. So you should study those descriptions and you can see how you are progressing. There's Shraddha to Prem descriptions Rupa Goswami gives. There's the that's in Nectar Devotion and many, 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 many places. Madhurya Kadambini. There's Kanista Majjhima and Uttama, that's described in the Ishopanishad, in the 11th canto, and in the Nectar of Instruction. And you can see, how am I progressing? There's the modes of nature, that's described in the Bhagavad Gita. There's descriptions in the Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, the end, 12th chapter, the end, 14th chapter, the end, that describes the qualities of someone who's spiritually advanced. So you read that and see, to what extent am I developing these qualities? There's the 26 qualities of a devotee given in the 3rd canto by Lord Kapila Dev, also given by in Majjalila by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and a couple other places. And you can read those and see how much am I developing these qualities. So nothing can stop you from being Krishna conscious. So if your parents are making your Krishna consciousness difficult, then please, everything we discussed today. You have a sheet? You have a paper? You got a paper? My mother didn't want me to be Krishna conscious. My father did, but my mother didn't. My sister didn't talk to me for 10 years after I started Krishna consciousness. Can you imagine? And my sister and I were very close. We were best friends. For 10 years, she would not speak to me.
How to keep up determination in spiritual life?
I think that's the same question she asked.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the same answer. You will only be fully determined when you're above the modes of nature. So other ways, you know, that's why we take vows. I'm going to chant 16 rounds when I feel like it, when I don't feel like it. Mm-hmm. Were you there this morning for that class? So if you ask somebody, maybe you can get a copy of the paper. I gave a paper about the ups and downs of life. But I read the purport to Bhagavad Gita 14:22. Also, you know, it's interesting. If you take some little austerities, it will help increase your determination. Make sure they're little, and you take them little at a time. Don't do too much austerities at once. Sometimes we have difficulty with determination if I'm trying to do too many austere things at one time. If I'm trying to push myself too hard, too fast. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, fall down is from going too slowly or too fast. So sometimes you try to push yourself to a level that you can't maintain. Sometimes that's the problem. I don't know what's your particular situation. But you can try, you see, maybe I'm doing too much austerity. Maybe I have to give myself some more fun in Krishna consciousness also. Don't have everything be difficult. And maybe the problem is I'm not having enough sacrifice. So you may want to take some little thing. Just some little thing. You know, maybe take a vow for 3 days that you'll read some more Bhagavad Gita or you won't eat any sweets for 2 days. Or some little thing. Do some little things like that. As you, just like if you practice picking up heavy burdens, your muscles become stronger. If you practice doing things that require determination, your determination will also get stronger. But you've got to practice it very gradually. There's that famous story of the man who wanted to become strong. And so his trainer told him, take a newborn bull and carry it up the hill. And every day you carry this bull up the hill. So the bull keeps getting bigger. So very gradually his strength increased. So you want to gradually increase your capacity for determination. So, you know, push yourself a little bit. You know, don't try to carry a full-grown bull immediately up a hill. But push yourself a little bit more than what you're doing. And try for a few days, see how it goes. Okay. Also associate with people who are determined, that helps. Don't associate with nonsense people or weak people. I mean, you can, you know, say hardball and be friendly. Not that you don't talk to anybody else. But, you know, you're try to get some good friends who are really determined.
If you can spare some time and we can discuss something about Prabhupada Nectar, we'd be very grateful.
Oh, I'll have to see if we can arrange that. That's another hour, 2 hour class.
If you can spend maybe 10 minutes now.
No. Yes.
We are talking about obstacles. Sometimes we don't know about the obstacle only. In that case, what will happen?
What do you mean?
Means sometimes there is an obstacle. Say, for example, Madhija is talking about chanting or something. So we don't know that it is happening to us. For example, somebody is giving you tea and you drink it. It is out of the four principles and it is really an obstacle, which we don't know. It is a test also.
You didn't know it was tea?
No.
You mean someone gives you tea and you don't know it's tea?
Yeah. It's something like that. You don't know that's an obstacle.
So you don't know that tea is an obstacle or you don't know that the person gave you tea?
I'm just giving an example of a tea. Saying that, okay, I don't... If I don't know... For example, there is a jamun. I don't know that it is a jamun only. Means I'm not aware of it only.
So if someone gives you tea and you're not aware, you're not responsible for that. But you're supposed to become aware. You should ask what somebody's giving you. Sometimes there's mistakes, you know, that's... Don't worry about that. Accidental fall down, accidental mistake does not... That's not important. Completely not important. No meaning. You just tell Krishna you're sorry and you go on. It's like if I accidentally, like this morning, I knocked over my water and I spilled it. It doesn't mean anything. So if you make a mistake accidentally, but then try to be more careful. You ask people, what are you giving me? That's, we have some responsibility to ask, what is this? I don't know if I should say this. I was at one temple where at the Sunday feast, they served bread. So I am thinking, if it's a temple and it's a Sunday feast, it must be food made by devotees. I didn't imagine that they're buying the bread. I didn't even think for one moment that I should ask. So I didn't ask. So maybe 2-3 weeks later, it was right before Nityananda's appearance day, we were coming back from Harinam, and the devotees I was with stopped at some non-devotee bakery, and they bought some bread. And I saw it looks the same. And I said, is this the same bread you bought for the Sunday feast? Oh yes, we always buy from here. Well, what to do? I already ate it. So now I always ask. Now I always ask. Sometimes people get offended. But now I always ask. Whenever I see something that might be not cooked by devotees. Devotees cook this? And I've learned I have to ask. A long time ago in ISKCON, I didn't have to ask. Accidental is not... It doesn't mean anything. I mean, you should tell Krishna you're sorry. You shouldn't just go, well, it doesn't matter. You know? should have some regret that you weren't careful. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No, we should be careful. We should try to be careful. Oh, I tell you another story. I don't know if I should tell you this story either. This is a terrible story. So there was one lady and I, we were going out on book distribution, and we were traveling in a van. In America at Christmas time, you can sell a lot of books. We have our Christmas marathon. Because people, the Christians are trained that at Christmas time you give to charity. And they're buying presents, so they're buying presents and giving in charity. So we usually can sell like 10 times as many books. So we were on traveling Sankirtan, this one devotee and myself. And we would travel to, we would usually go to malls and shopping centers and sell books, but it was illegal. So if the police found us, they would throw us out. And, you know, you hope they wouldn't put you in jail. And they would throw you out. So we had gone in all the shops, and we had gone in each shop for maybe 1-2 hours, and then they had asked us to leave. But it was still maybe 7 o'clock. So we thought we have 2 more hours. We didn't want to just waste our time, but there was no place to go. It was a small town. So we thought, we'll go to one bar. You know what is a bar? Where they sell alcohol. So we thought it was a military, by a military base. So military is very good to sell for selling books, because now maybe the military is different, but young people who have a lot of money and not much responsibility, so they'll easily, and they're often very interested in spiritual life because they're fighting and they're very dangerous. So we thought, okay, this will be good. We'll go into this bar. So we didn't look carefully at what was this bar. So it was a naked girl dancing bar. So we walked in the bar, and this devotee looks at me and she says, "Urmila, I don't think that woman is wearing anything." And I look, I say, "No, I don't think she's wearing it." And she said, "Should we stay here and distribute books?" I said, "We can try for 5 minutes." We were so embarrassed. She and I felt so embarrassed. We couldn't stop laughing. We were like giggling, you know. And finally we just left. We just couldn't stay there. So that was also accidental. We just didn't look carefully. I mean, we should have looked at the sign. We just didn't look, you know. We were just thinking, oh, we have no place to go. We'll go here. So after 5 minutes, we left. But you have to look. You have to pay attention to what you're doing, not just, you know, go someplace. My embarrassing stories. So Krishna's not going to punish you for that. And we were trying to sell Prabhupada's books. We didn't sell any in there. Oh, Krishna. Oh, my God. That was really crazy. But you should take care, you know, try to take care. Yes?
Did you say that the children should get married at early age?
I'm not saying. Who's saying? Who's saying? Prabhupada said. Who else says? Shastra says.
Ritik and Vedik.
I'm not saying.
Said like
that. When they are not of sufficient or when they're studying, how can we give them such bigger
stuff? I don't know. How did they used to do that? You know, for thousands and millions of years. How did they do that? So everybody, just the whole society fell apart, right? How did they do it? You tell me, how did they do it?
I'm asking you the solution.
I'm asking you. You're Indian. You're Indian, correct? Okay. So I think in India, maybe 20 years before, everybody was getting married young. So the whole society was finished? How did they do it? You know how they did it. How did they do it?
They had women who are not working much.
The women were not working. Oh, they were working.
Not much.
Different kind of work.
The percentage was...
Very different kind of work.
Oh, okay.
Those women were not lazy. Yes. Believe me, they were not lazy. A different kind of work. Much more satisfying work, honestly.
Ah, yes, honestly.
I'll tell you, more satisfying work. What I told my young girl students when I was running a gurukul, I said, yes, you should have some career. Women also have varna, right? Are there Brahmin women, Kshatriya women, Vaishya women, Shudra women, right?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So women also have varna. That means we have some desire to do something besides just wife and mother. I said, but do something you can do from your home. Draupadi tells Satyabhama, she said, I'm the only one who knows all of the money coming in and all the money going out of the kingdom. She was the secretary of the treasury. But she was not going out to an office. The men didn't used to go to an office either. Everybody used to work from their home. Men would work from their home. Women would work from their home. And they lived with the in-laws. It was an extended family. That's how they did it. Or sometimes they lived with the girls' parents. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was with his daughter and son-in-law. So there was extended family. And the women had a way to be fulfilled from the home. Now, nowadays, if you don't go out to work, what are you going to do at home? Just watch television. But you can understand, if they tell you you can only have one or two children maximum. I was seeing so many signs, one is best. You know what happens if you only have one child, like in China? You know what happens? After 2-3 generations, there's no more uncles and aunts, there's no more cousins, no more brothers and sisters. So now in China, you have 2-3 generations, no brothers and sisters, no cousins, no uncles and aunts. Just imagine what has happened to their society. So now the government is starting to say, no, you should have more children. Because they're seeing big problem. Anyway, if you're telling women, you should only have maximum 2 children. And if you have your refrigerator and you have your blender, and what are you going to do all day? Your washing machine, what will you do? Watch television and eat chocolate and get fat. I mean, what will you do? So that's not a very satisfying life. So who wants to do that? If you have any brain in your head, who wants to live like that? Nobody wants to live like that. But that was not, the old system was not like that. The Kshatriya women, they were helping run the government. The Brahmin women, they were helping teach. We just saw in Tirupati, they have a ceremony where the Brahmin men and the Brahmin women, they're both doing different services. The Vaishya women, they were helping farm or helping produce milk products. The Sudra women, they were helping with the crafts and the entertainment. Everyone was doing something valuable. And you can do, today you can do home-based business. It's funny, our family didn't plan to do this. We did the research later, but that's what we did. We had a school, we ran a gurukul in our house. So I ran a nursery school and a gurukul from my house. I didn't have to take my children to some other place. And then my husband ran a business from the house, which meant that the children helped with the business and the school, which meant that the family was very tight, and the children learned many, many skills. By the time they were 12, 13, all our children, they knew how to manage, they knew how to teach, they knew how to program computers. They knew more than somebody with a bachelor's degree when they were 12, 13 years old, from practical work. And they felt, I'm a valuable member of society. I mean, our youngest son, when he was 20, 21, he was already the second level manager of an international textile company. Why? Because he was helping manage our business from the house. So you can't just take one thing. You have to take the whole thing. So that means that, you know, my daughter's been teaching dance from her house. So that means extended family, village, home-based business. So if a woman's not doing something for her psychology, then she'll also be very unhappy. We're not only wives and mothers. We have ashram and varna. Just like men have ashram and varna, we also have our varna. So that needs some expression. And just like I was in Tirupati, so the husband and wife were running the temple. Husband's running some parts of the temple, wife's running other parts of the temple. And best thing is if the husband and wife are of the same varna, that's why you have this idea of marrying the same caste. Now it's become crazy, but the original idea was very intelligent, that if you marry a man and woman who have the same inclinations, then they can work together in some livelihood from the home. And then the woman's natural desire, we also want to contribute to society. We're not, you know, we want to do something meaningful and something that engages our mind and our propensity. But that should not be at the expense of our husband and our children and our home. So it can be done. But you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just take one piece. Okay, now we're just going to take early marriage, leave everything else the same. No, you have to look at everything. Have the support from the family. Have other ways in the society to function. Anyway, I'll go back to the same thing I said before. If we live in harmony with biology and nature, it's easier to be Krishna conscious. But you can be Krishna conscious in any situation. Even if the material side of your life is madness, you can still be Krishna conscious. Even if you're living in a city and you're working in a job and you don't get married until you're 40, and you can still be Krishna conscious. But it's a lot easier if you do things the way Krishna's advised. It's easier to be Krishna conscious. Why? Because then you're living more in harmony with Krishna. I mean, is that okay? And for some of us, it's too late to do what Krishna advises. It's already finished. You know? What can you do? I mean, especially in the West, but I think it's happening more and more in India. I mean, if someone comes to Krishna consciousness, they're already 45, they're already divorced twice with two children from this man, you can't tell them anymore, follow the Vedas. There's no Vedas for them. You understand? There's no Vedic injunctions for such a person. What do you do? So, oh, it doesn't matter. Chant Hare Krishna, serve the Sankirtan movement, it's no problem. And it isn't a problem. And they'll become Krishna conscious and they'll be happy and everything will be okay. So we also have some people, you know, you can't go back and do it properly anymore. Okay, never mind. Start from where you are now and go on. It's not so important. It's important. It's not that it's not important, but it's not... We're not so interested just in culture. We're interested in loving Krishna. Just like, why are we having the class in the house instead of outside? We can have this class outside, but then it would be very hot. It would be hot, it would be noisy, more difficult. So it's like that. The culture is like the room. It makes it easier. But you can have the class anywhere. We could have the class on the train. It would be difficult, but you can have it anywhere. All right? Is that okay? Most important thing, fall in love with Krishna. That's what's most important. Don't worry so much about these other things. But if you want to make it easy to fall in love with Krishna, then try to follow the Vedas as far as possible. None of us are going to follow totally. Forget it. Not in Kali Yuga. Nobody's going to follow. I don't, you know, if someone comes and says, I'm following perfectly, I don't believe it. I was talking to one devotee in Sri Rangam, and he was telling me there's really orthodox Brahmins. They do this, this, this. He said, but this thing they don't do. So you'll find something they don't do. They only take a bath in well water. You know, they only eat their own cooked food, but maybe they have a television something. That's Kali Yuga, to do every single thing that's in the Shastra. You'll go crazy, you know? And then you'll forget about Krishna. You'll just be okay with singing the Shastra. But as far as possible. As far as possible. Yes, Harini Radha, you're going to tell me I should stop? I think I should stop. It's almost 5 o'clock. And everybody has been sitting for too long. So if I have said anything that you have found useful, I hope you can take that. If I've said anything you don't find useful, you just forget about it. I hope I've said at least one or two things that will help each of you. Thank you very much for having me here. Hare Krishna.